Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Coach Conversations. My name is Katherine Halpin, and I'm your host today for Coach Conversations, our blog talk radio show sponsored by the Phoenix chapter of the International Coach Federation. And I'm so pleased to introduce my... guest today, Alan Millam. He is the founder of Bowl Moves. It's his signature work. It's a strategic system for catapulting high-energy individuals into lives of great contribution. For the past 15 years, Alan's company, Bowl Moves Enterprises, Inc., an international human performance development firm, has provided senior-level performance and leadership strategy, top-level coaching, and consulting in leadership and career development. Having climbed more than one corporate ladder, Alan has gained key understanding of the dynamic relationship between the needs of individual contributors and the objectives of organizations. Alan's career is distinguished by being one of the only 600 recipients worldwide of the Master Certified Coach designation awarded by the International Coach Federation. In addition, he has more than 20 years of experience impacting top-performing teams and individuals in entrepreneurial consulting businesses and Fortune 25 companies. Prior to starting his own company, Alan's professional experience included serving as a consultant for one of the world's leading career transition firms, Drake Beam Morin. He also held key leadership roles for Marriott International and with TMI North America, an international human resources consulting firm focusing on branded customer service, culture change, and human relations. Alan is the co-author of the Amazon Top 100 bestseller, Bowl Moves, Jump to Outstanding Self-Managed Action, and the workbook, Empathy, Connecting with the Customer. He holds a master's degree in counseling psychology and is certified in the Positive Psychology Coaching Program taught by one of the founding fathers of the field of positive psychology, Dr. Martin Seligman. Alan holds active memberships with the International Coach Federation and the National Speakers Association. And for our listeners, if you'd like to find out more about Alan while you listen today, you can go to his website, makingbowlmoves.com. So welcome, Alan.
Well, thank you. It's quite an introduction. I hope my mother was listening.
Yes, an introduction that your mother would be proud of, and yeah. I'm especially proud. I'm especially proud to be here with you today. For our listeners, just for your information, Alan and I go back about a dozen years. Our eyes met across the room at an International Coach Federation meeting, and we became fast friends and have stayed fast friends and nurtured that and strengthened that connection over the years. And it is a great joy for me to be here today with my dear, dear friend, Alan. So thank you, Alan, for being willing to spend this time with us.
It's fun to be with you, and I'm excited for this.
Yeah, it's a great program, and we've attracted up to 4,500 listeners in recent shows. So we're getting great coverage in the coaching community. So, Alan, I just want to start with a little background information. I always like to know where people grew up. I think that influences who they are. So tell us a little bit about where you grew up.
Oh, I think that's true. I grew up in Kalamazoo, Michigan, in the good old Midwest, and that's a great question. It's like I think of Kalamazoo being a place where you leave the door open to the house unlocked and the ice cream truck, you know, winding through the neighborhood and playing in the neighborhood creek without fear of razor blades on the creek side or concern for the West Nile virus, you know, from a mosquito bite. It was a really wonderful time. And, you know, I also think that, you know, I think about growing up, many people are attracted to the helping professions, often have some life experience early on that provides them an opportunity to develop skills that may serve in their adulthood. And for me in Kalamazoo at the age of six, seven, I wasn't reading like the little tykes next to me in school. And, you know, it's, as I recall, it was like, you know, first it was the parent-teacher conferences, and then it was specialist and psychologist and labs. And in third grade, you know, it was really the recommendation at that point that I be removed from the public school system and be sent away. There was a Nazarene College that had a very good reading program, and next to it was a military school run by Catholic nuns. Now, Catherine, you know me. I have to pause for a moment because, one, I'm not Catholic, and as you know, I'm not really a fan of the NRA, and so carrying a rifle at the age of 8 was really quite a trip, right?
Why?
And,
I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, and yet I went, and so for 3 years, I went to boarding school, and then the good news is I learned to read, as I say, but the challenge was, of course, when I reentered into, I think it was sixth grade, you know, obviously my little psyche had been rocked, and
right.
So I was sort of in a Rambo mode where it was really just about surviving, and if I got back home from school and got back to my house and got into bed at night, it was like, wow, I won for the day, and so it was really, you know, because I just had to learn to reenter and learn, you know, from a private school and Catholic to, you know, public school and you know, in the Midwest. So it just, but I found my sea legs. I suddenly got it, and I got, you know, excelled in high school and went to a private liberal arts college and had the privilege of living abroad for my junior year. But I really, you know, think that there were pivotal moments out of that have
right.
given me amazing gifts that
yeah.
I get to apply to what I do today.
Yes, I would imagine your high degree of empathy came from
mm-hmm.
that, those early pivotal experiences in the
yeah.
boarding school. And,
yeah,
and,
I wouldn't wish on anyone, but it was what it was,
and,
you know?
And your willingness to be vulnerable today, yeah, I think probably, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I would think that because you had to be, you were so vulnerable at such an early age, and went through that probably, which was, I mean, I hesitate to use this word, but it probably was a traumatic experience. Being in that military environment, such a
well,
little tight.
Well, no, I did it, and mm-hmm. as I say, it took decades to sort of heal the abandonment and rejection stuff. But
right.
you know, I'm a believer that things don't happen by mistake, and
right.
You know, I think the irony now that we're at this point in the story, I think it's interesting that you know, nearly a generation later, you know, I'm being called into our daughter's, you know, first grade class, you know, because the teacher wanted to talk about our adorable little daughter, and I just couldn't be happier to get over there and have that chat with the teacher about, you know, her exquisite personality and her wonderful sense of humor, and gosh darn, she's just so cute. So when she started to say, well, there's something that we can't quite get our fingers on about your daughter, and we think she ought to be checked out, and I was just stunned.
Yeah.
And so we did get it checked out, and she indeed was diagnosed with acute dyslexia, and the psychiatrist said, just looked up past her and said, now which of you had a learning disability as a kid? And I literally remember turning around to see if someone else had just walked into the office, because I was just so stunned, and a very,
right.
very happy ending on that, because in this case, we got to get into early prevention, and her favorite class is reading and full comprehension, and so,
oh,
you know, we didn't
wonderful.
Ship her off, but it is amazing how that very early on experience sort of, you know, has roots as you grow into
right.
your professions.
Right, 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 right. Well, what we have to be grateful for is that the educational system has advanced so far in this, you know, from
Amen.
One generation to another.
Amen.
The resources
right.
available for Kate were tremendous, I'm
right.
sure.
Right.
Well, tell us, you know, I did read that very impressive bio, but tell us more about your background, your early professional job.
Well, you know, early years were in corporate America. You know, most of my 20s I was in the hospitality industry. And I was there with 6 years with a residence inn company that was actually bought out by Marriott. So it was an amazing story, working for a company out of Wichita, Kansas, with 7 residence inn hotels. I worked with one of the first ones in California. And then leaving with, I think, 100 and some open, and I don't know how many they have now. I mean, it was really amazing textbook story. But I was, you know, total ego trip about 6 or 7 years into Marriott. I was a regional director of sales and marketing, and I was really sort of lured to the high-tech industry. I was in Northern California, and it was a total ego trip in retrospect. It was more money and a car and a fancy title, and, you know, I was like, wow. Now, it was about a month of negotiating, which should have been a real burning bush clue that maybe this wasn't a leap I was to make. But I moved from a very well-oiled machine called Marriott to a 14-person engineering environment where everyone wore the same clothes every day. And the only perky one was me, right? And so the products didn't really, it was about just get duplicating equipment. And so about, I think that lasted about 9 months of being miserable. But I couldn't quit, Catherine. I think that's really sort of interesting to say, because I was so wired that I had to succeed. I think a lot of that early childhood stuff just said, no matter what, you said yes, so you're going to figure this out. But then one day I came in and the boss said, it's time to end this. And I was really horrified and shamed, you know. And then I was living in San Francisco. And so by the time I was driving over the Bay Bridge to San Francisco, and it was a clear day, and I just, all of a sudden, this unbelievable relief and freedom came, right? And, and what a gift, what a humbling gift that was. And I remember taking a solo walk on the beach, and I was 31 years old, and it was really the first time in my life that I asked myself, what is it that I wanted? Because, again, I think from Barbara Hall, I was so wired around being out there for others and playing the game that I never really, you know, said, what's really important for you? And I'd always been about people and relationships, as you sort of mentioned, and psychology. So I actually did go back. I got into grad school and got a graduate degree in counseling psychology and holistic health. And during school, I aligned myself with a human resource consulting firm in San Francisco and worked with them for a couple years. And then when I graduated from grad school, I think it was a 3-year program, I ended up, as you mentioned, going into the career management work and worked for DBM in San Francisco. And that took me nearly up to the coaching door. I was there, I think, for about 6 years.
I love this story. It gives me goosebumps to think about you. I can just picture you walking on the beach there in the Bay Area, asking yourself that question and starting, you know, when we were in those corporate jobs, we didn't have as much awareness as we have about ourselves today and our values.
That's right.
But I can so see yourself starting to craft that life.
Well, you know how we're so influenced by external messaging, right? 3,500 messages a day, I think, is currently the statistic telling us who and what we should be. And I was pretty committed to, you know, being invested in other, right, and what they thought. So it was a humble walk. I'll just never forget it. And even though I had the awareness, it was baby steps for those first couple of years. But I'm really glad that I had that privilege and, you know, I wonder if I hadn't been fired, where would I be today, right? I mean, there's always that gift, even in those moments where it doesn't feel great when it's happening.
Right. Of course, there's a gift in everything.
Right.
And as someone who was going to, in the 1980s, write a book about how to build your wealth through severance packages, I can so relate, and I can so see how that we had to go through those things to get to where we are today.
That's right. Great title.
I want to remind our listeners that they're welcome to call in. I'm going to start asking a few more questions about your coaching career and how you migrated to that. But I want to just let our listeners know that they're welcome to call in. We'd be happy to take your questions. And I'm sure Alan would be happy to share anything that people are interested in. That call-in number is 1-424-243-9638. That's 1-424-243-9638. So please do join us live if you're able to. I'd like to introduce our production coordinator, Dr. Anna Malakan. Anna, I see that you've joined us this afternoon. Thank you so much for being here.
Hello, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm really looking forward to listen to this hour.
Yeah, thanks for making it work. So, Alan, when you were in those corporate HR and outplacement transition management roles, tell us what were the pivotal experiences that led you into coaching? I know that a great deal of that work probably was called coaching and It was very much coaching-like in nature, but tell us how you came to find the coaching that we know.
Well, it's interesting because it was just coming in, but it, you know, when you talk about pivotal experiences, I think I'm sort of drawn to go back to the childhood piece, you know, because given the bumpiness of it, you know, as we addressed earlier, I think one of the gifts early on was, you know, I think unconsciously I just really became a perfect child, and I wanted to avoid ever being sent away, and adults had the power. And so I think I really learned to read people. I think I learned to become likable. I think I learned, as you said earlier, you know, that empathy skill set, right, around the age of 12. And, you know, I think I was about 12, asking my mother about her interpersonal relationship with my dad, you know, and she responding, "I'm not sure what you mean, and little boys shouldn't be asking those questions." So, oh, well, there you go.
How funny.
You know.
That's so funny.
Clearly, you know, by the time I got to about 31, you know, there were two key people, I think, and that really got me to the door of coaching. And first was my wife, and she has served as an amazing portal for me in a number of ways in my life. And in this case, she was managing East Bay Marriott Hotels in California and wanted to provide coaching for her leaders. So she actually contacted CTI. They reside in Northern California, one of the bigger coaching schools on the planet, and met with the two owners and hired them. And I just remember her coming home after the first day of a workshop just like, "Oh, my gosh, this thing's amazing. You've got to know about it, and these two gifted people are cool." And so we actually and it worked. It was like, you know, it just happened. And I, you know, as I say, the rest is history. I signed up for both the courses, but then also for certification. And it just felt so great to be connected with purposeful work and a career. You know, I was the kid at 12 where, you know, Bill was going to be in sales, Scott was going to be a mechanic, or, you know, Anne-Marie was going to be in nursing. And I'm like, how do you know that, right? It was like I was the one that didn't get the chip. So the gratitude of getting to that 1 yard line and thinking, wow, you may have found it. And then I think the second pivotal experience was in the certification program for CTI. They required that you hire a coach. And so I hired this amazing guy by the name of Jeff Staggs out of Minneapolis, and he held the possibility for me leaving corporate America. And I really firmly believe without his coaching, I mean, it's all perfect, right, the timing and whatnot, but I'll just never forget the two words my mother had when I left corporate America, and they simply were, "Get therapy." Because for her, you know, her perspective in her generation, it was about safety and letting the organization take care of you.
Right.
You know, don't rock the boat and then retire with your pension 30 years later. And so I was a little disappointed, but I got it, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you move into coaching, you know, I was excited, but there were definitely naysayers, right, who thought I'd lost my mind. And, of course, this was 15 years ago, but I still tell new coaches to force field themselves because there are those that are just not going to get it. And I sort of make up that some of them are so miserable in their jobs, they just want you to be miserable too, so stay with them.
I can
remember, Catherine, I literally can remember sitting in my office on this 23rd floor of a building in downtown San Francisco with my fingers glued to the desk as if a part of my destiny was to be employee 69248 forever. You know, my coach said, you know, you just asked that powerful question. So what's really stopping you from launching your own business? And it was really that question. I remember looking out over the bay and just thinking, there's nothing stopping me, right? It's just like this can happen. And it was, I was nervous, right? But that door opened and I went through it. Now, you know, you and I both are not fans of quitting work, you know, quit immediately to build a coaching business from scratch, right? I mean, that's sort of painful.
Right.
So we definitely want to barter the day job, you know, so you can ease into getting clients, right? It's way more effortless, but, you know, but that really was the beginning. I think it was those two, you know, both my wife and the coaching piece, and that really got me in, and you know, really then I once I finished with that and certification, I launched. And it was probably a little bit of a blessing because you could not walk in off the street to work with us at DBM, the company had to hire us. And so, you know, there was something happening in my office, right, that the fluorescent lights were not on. I had this little water feature. I had a lamp with a dimmer, right, and a round table. No, you know, so it's like when people came in, what was really cool is that these were very accomplished executives, but through merger and acquisition, for the first time, they were finding themselves literally in a white room with no clue as to where they're going next. And we certainly had a process at DBM, but it gave me the beginning of just looking deeper, like what's important to you and, you know, value alignment and whatnot. And so that was really the beginning, you know, and it was consulting. There was no word of coach there at that time, but that really was, those were pivotal for the launch into this amazing profession.
Of course, and just, I would think, extraordinarily valuable work to do to prepare you for coaching, because you were having those intimate one-on-one, you know, relationships and helping people move forward, getting from they were to where they wanted
be.
So
it's funny you say that, because I've never done this, but I know my first client was literally a former DBM client. She had heard that I was into this coaching. She was a partner with a top consulting firm, and she was looking at some work-life stuff. And she said, hey, I've heard you're on your own, and that was really client one. And then she referred me to, you know, client two. I mean, that's literally how it happened, which was really cool. So. Love the perfection of it.
Yeah, it evolves as it should.
Right.
Yes. Well, I want to remind our listeners that they're welcome to call in. That number is 1-424-243-9638. That's 1-424-243-9638. And I know that Alan would be very happy to take your questions, and we'd love to be able to have a chance to interact with our listeners this afternoon. I'd like to take a little bit of a left turn, Alan, and ask you to tell us the story of how you came to be the founder of our Phoenix chapter of the International Coach Federation.
One of the most vibrant chapters
in the world, I believe.
I'll take credit for opening the conversation, but I was definitely a co-founder with three amazing coaches that launched that chapter. You know, it was very much a team sport. The idea was birthed really out of one of the most meaningful leadership experiences I think I've had in my life. I've certainly had a lot of personal and professional growth and development, but CTI, in addition to being an amazing coaching company, also had a one-year leadership program where you could participate in 4 one-week residential experiences with about, you know, 15 to 20 other leaders. And it really was a brilliant program. And one of the things that you learned towards the end of it was really, you know, looking at leadership, but looking at leading from nothing, meaning look out in your world and ask what's needed and lead it somewhere, right? And we had just, my family had just relocated to Phoenix in, I think, 2001, and I was really a bit stunned that the fifth largest city in America didn't have a vibrant chapter going, right? So in the bold moves business, we really define, you know, bold move making is when you have that flash of intuition, you know, like an idea that sort of guides you to an adventuresome thought, and when that happens, synchronicity abounds. And so I had this idea, and it's almost at the same time I met the very powerful Linda Miller, who I think is going to be speaking early next year. And
yeah.
I met her at an ICF conference in Chicago. And at the same time, and I don't know which was first or second, but I sat next to the very passionate Pete Walsh, who's from Phoenix, and we were in a meeting, and I just remember saying to both, you know, what do you think? And then I met Catherine Ross, who had very deep ties to the business community. She was actually the head of Valley Leadership. And, you know, bottom line, it was like bing, 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 four of us. It was done, and it was magical. And I think in retrospect, there were really three things that really served the launch. Obviously, a very deep passion to the profession, right? And there was really unique diversity among us because Linda had been at Coach U and a leader there. Pete had come from the Newfield Network, I believe, and Catherine and I were both from CTI. So it was really sort of cool that we had somewhat, you know, same passion to the topic, but also educated a bit differently. And I also think the second thing was really we brought enough business expertise and credibility to make it happen. You know, I believe Linda had actually – didn't Linda – I think she had started the – or helped co-found the Seattle chapter, if I'm right. And
right.
So,
yeah, I'm pretty certain of that.
Yeah. And then I think the third and probably most important is that we just really – we really locked in and put a stake in the ground that we really wanted to design something that would get legs and that coaches would come. And the bottom line is we really believe it would happen. And so the four of us agreed to serve for 3 years. We actually, to keep it effortless, went into co-president mode. So Linda and I were co-presidents the first year and then stayed on as past presidents for the next year. And then we stayed on one more year. And then Catherine and Pete served in the second year and then stayed on. And so there was a nice sustainability model built in so that we really could be there to make sure the legs happen. And it really worked. And I'm thrilled because next year was when we were having those conversations with the four of us. And I think in 2014 it will be the 10-year anniversary for the chapter. Mm-hmm. And not only are you chartered now, but also under the current president, I think Molly O'Neill, I believe you've had your first PRISM Awards for
That's
the chapter.
Correct.
So,
that's correct.
Very
proud,
a lot of pride, and it's just amazing the growth.
Well, it's especially a lot of pride for me. Oh, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, just, you know, there are chapters that don't have such an amazing success story, and, you know, it's just, boy, it's amazing to see. It's unbelievable that we're coming up to a decade, but really cool.
Well, the reason it's so special to me what you and Linda and Catherine Ross and Pete Walsh were able to accomplish is because in 1996, before there was an International Coach Federation, Thomas Leonard himself had reached out to me and a very famous individual in Tucson named Jeff Rame, who was pivotal in really helping us launch the International Coach Federation at a global level and taking it to that early stages, bringing two or three small groups of people together. And Jeff and I were charged by Thomas Leonard himself with starting the Arizona chapter, and we failed miserably. We met for about 6 months in Casa Grande, which is halfway, just is a hellhole halfway
between
Tucson
and Phoenix, yeah.
Right, and I mean, we did some fun things, but we were not a robust chapter by any stretch. Probably would have never been able to complete all the paperwork to become a chartered chapter. And then, you know, that folded, and then there were at least another six iterations of lots of good people that tried their darndest to bring us all together with, you know, with different degrees of success. But you all were
I'm glad I didn't know that at the time.
Right. It's huge. It's just huge what you and Linda Miller and Pete Walsh and Catherine Ross did, and so I'm especially proud and excited and so happy and grateful that we do have the Vibrant chapter that we have today.
Mm.
And we did have our first PRISM Award, and we brought Stephen M. R. Covey. I like to call him Stephen Covey, Jr. We brought him here to be our speaker for the afternoon.
Wow.
And we had a huge luncheon at the Biltmore with probably 250 people presented to two corporate entities, the PRISM Award, and to promote coaching in corporate America. So we're a hugely successful chapter today, thanks to you.
Oh, that's so great.
Isn't that great? Yeah, it's so exciting. Let me just remind our listeners, if you'd like to call in, the number is 1-424-243-9638. And you're welcome to call in and ask Alan any question at all. I know he'll be able to field those questions beautifully and answer whatever you'd like to know, whether it's about running a chapter or launching a chapter or making that transition into coaching. We're going to talk now more about his success as a coach. Alan, I would say that, you know, I know thousands of coaches and from being a coach for almost 18 years, and I would say that you've got to be one of the most successful coaches that I know on lots of different levels, not just from a financial standpoint, not just from a professionalism, not just from the caliber of the clients that you coach, those senior executives in corporate America, but on so many levels, walking your talk, living your values, creating an extraordinary lifestyle for your family, so many levels. So I know our listeners want to hear about your journey to get to this powerful brand that you enjoy today.
Wow. I'm still breathless when I hear all that.
It's all true.
It's you know, it's a bit humbling to think that I can still remember charging $50 for a session and thinking, "Wow, are they going to pay for this?" Right.
Right.
And
right.
You know, there's that. I think there's that moment in every beginning coach's business where, you know, you muster up the courage to say the price over the phone for the coaching, and then you have to sit there in the silence just seems to last for eternity until you hear a response, you know, from the prospect. And I've had more big gulp moments probably during my career as a professional coach when I've just really lobbed a bigger and bigger fee right across the phone line.
Right.
And it's amazing. You and I have talked about this. It's, you know, almost 99% of the time there's not a pushback. So
right.
This is, you know, also, I guess, one of the more make or break deals, unfortunately, because I have seen really skilled coaches that, you know, are technically there and they can't get their arms around selling themselves, right, and being able to look in the mirror and put a value on them. I mean, I've even met coaches that were salespeople, right, but they were selling other products. And when
right.
it came to having to look in the mirror and sell themselves, they just, you know, couldn't do it. So it's not
right.
for the weak, you know.
Right.
But I guess if, you know, if I think of the journey, there are probably, you know, if I mustered a top, not a top 10 list, but, you know, if I think of things that I know that have made me successful, you know, I think first and foremost, you know, in addition to obviously being aligned to the chapter and to ICF and, you know, being a member and getting credentialed and whatnot, the one thing I invested in from the very first year was having a coach with me. I just paid for it, right? And there were times where it's like, wow, this is a big expense. I mean,
right.
You know, and call them gremlins or call them saboteurs or in our work in the Bold Moves book, we call them inner critters. You know, I knew that I wasn't meant to go it alone. And so, you know, I can just tell you that exponentially my climb would never have been as high nor as fast had I not had someone in the form of a coach, you know, who is a bit ahead of me, you know, to be there to hold it, you know. So that's definitely number one. And, you know, I think the second one is really for all of us who are extroverts, all those listening that are extroverts, right, who are thinking or starting a coaching business, you know, coming from full-time work in an organization, because that's what I did. And, you know, it can be a lonely climb in the beginning because
right.
for most coaching, it's an introverted practice, right? You know?
Right.
And so I knew it was important, you know, I mean, I love the work, but I also, I'm a really strong or clear extrovert. And so I knew that I had to have a support team around me. In fact, to this day, each year I design a board of advisors, you know, that I get to lean into and they get to hold me accountable and I get to check in with them. So it just took the oneness out of it, and it may, even though I was one-on-one on the phone or in person doing the coaching, you know, I sort of wired it so that I wasn't feeling alone, you know. And
right.
And you know this one because it's, you know, sometimes my heart aches because I think when I see coaches at a coaching chapter meeting, you know, and you know, we're all dressed up and we're so proud to have made the leap, you know, and yet sometimes I'm like, wow, what's behind that smile? Because I think, you know, it is not an effortless thing. I mean, it you know,
right.
it takes a lot to make the leap and to do it successfully. And I just can't underscore enough not to, you know, not to be a lone ranger and you know, create, it's a funny term, but create your board of advisors or your board of directors, right? You know,
right.
Not paying,
right.
of course, but, you know,
right.
build it so that you don't feel alone. So,
right.
I think, and I spoke of this a lot during my time in Phoenix, but, you know, it's really defining how many chairs represent a full business for you. So I call it the chair program. And if it's 10 or 12 or 15, whatever your number is, you know, when I used to coach coaches, I would request they get out sticky notes. And actually
uh-huh.
my coaches would literally go get little chairs, you know, place them in a row
that.
On the desk, right? And,
uh-huh.
and then each chair represents a client. So you would write your client, if you've got some clients, each chair, write the name of the client and when that client engagement's going to expire. And then I'd ask the coach to focus on the empty chairs, right? And every day, every work day, spend at least 2 hours focused on business development and networking to fill those remaining chairs. And, you know, I you know, I was just like a lot of folks, at least back then. You know, I was in monthly, you know, like a 1 month or a 3 month assignment, and I can remember being so bummed out when those 90 days was up because I'm like just getting going. But I sort of positioned the coaching as 3 months, so in their head it's sort of like, good, let's do it and then we'll be done, right? And I thought, if I could get to 6 months, I could cut my networking down and I could do the stuff I'm loving doing and I could actually have more guaranteed income. And so that was a really, and that chair program helped me to really focus, because sometimes if we don't have that visual structure, then, you know, our little critters or, you know, saboteurs or whatever sort of, you know, make the deafening emptiness sound like it's in charge, and it's not the case. So, and with that, I shifted, probably even more important than chairs or aligned with it, is I shift from a monthly format to an outcome-focused program format. And that was a game changer for me, and I'll never forget it, because the first time I pitched a six-month program and I doubled my fees and I got it without pause, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. Now, that was a big gulp moment, right, because I was still having some noise about charging. But I was very careful to co-create desired outcomes, right in the beginning, right in that first phone call, like, what do you want? What's the result? And I know this is not new today, but I think it's really important to underscore that, you know, I noticed in my listening with that first phone call with a potential prospect that we were articulating what they wanted, but then I was also listening and intuiting for something that wasn't being said that seemed to be in the space of what they wanted, and I threw those in, right? And I just assumed partnership from the very first prospect call. So it wasn't waiting till we inked the deal that they were partners. I assumed it from the moment the first call came in. And because I was word of mouth, I had the benefit of someone saying, hey, Tom told me I needed to speak with you. So it was warmed up a little bit, right? But I'll have to tell you that if a prospect mentioned cost in the first minute or two, that was a yellow flag on the field, right?
Right.
Because, that used to trigger me, because, what they were basically doing was trying to commoditize me, you know, like, what's this going to cost ahead of the results?
Yeah.
Like, we haven't even talked about what you can do. This may have a huge impact in your life, and you want to know what this is going to cost. So I better party one on that one for a while. But finally scripted it so that I just say, you know, I can't price this till I know what you want to accomplish. And that seemed to work for prospects to understand that this just wasn't an off-the-shelf kind of thing.
Right.
And so with that program focus, I created a discussion document from that initial call, and I just said, if you'll go with me on this, what I'd like to do is listen and ask you about what outcomes, what you'd like to achieve, and I'd like to put it into a discussion document that you and I co-author, right? And, you know, and I would discuss the coaching philosophy and implementation in the document. And then before we'd hang up from that initial call, I would schedule a follow-up call so it was on our calendar, right, like a week out. So it was sort of cool. Now, I obviously, as I started raising my rates, I certainly was inquiring, and back then it was a lot of career coaching, so it was a fair question to say, well, tell me a little bit about what you're earning or whatnot. So there was some screening going on to ensure that we had a match there, right? But outside of that, what I really found in the follow-up call consistently, and I haven't changed it to this day, was the amazing alignment to what I was recording and what I was hearing and putting in and what they wanted. I mean, I virtually get no edits today, right? It's like you captured it perfectly. And now they're looking at the desired outcomes, and some of those are even bigger than they ever thought possible. And they're seeing the possibility of what they can have in their life and how it's going to come up. You know, they can sort of see the whole thing. And so when I then talk about the investment, it anchors in a place that they, you know, are way more comfortable with and are willing to invest in. Now, I have to say that I was very careful in defining my audience, and I'm not sure how this came to be, but I was always interested in human potential. I was always interested in how some thrive and some survive, mostly probably because of my own childhood experiences. And I knew that I wanted to work with people who were motivated in life, who had accomplishments they were proud of, and that were really lifelong learners. And I discovered really, I think, two things from this group of people. One is that they saw coaching as an investment, you know? It's like
they weren't
embarrassed about it. They were happy to, like, cool, let's get in. And they had no problem talking about it, right? And guess the second thing was, guess who they hung out with, right? It's like they hung out with people that were motivated to be their best. So by saying it's performance coaching, I found that they were willing to tell their friends about this cool thing that was happening in our relationship and the phone to ring. That defining of the audience that's sweet for you, but also in a way that sort of procreates itself. So
yes, I love
them.
I love that. That's so great. So it was really, Alan, knowing you and hearing this today, it seems like you did everything right. You hired a coach. You got clear on who your target market was. You had the little chair program with the little chairs and their names.
Right.
It seems like, you know, you're a textbook case for how to do it properly.
I don't know. That sounds big. I do feel, in thinking about what's unique to my success, you know, those are important things. I also think it's very important, as corny as it sounds, and I know it's a recommended practice, but I can remember very early on defining, writing out loud, or writing out on a paper, my ideal client attributes. And in fact, I carried it in my wallet, which was really goofy for me, but I had remembered a story, I think it was Jim Carrey, who wrote a check to himself for $10 million and put it in his wallet. And I think if the story goes, it's like his first movie gig was a $10 million paycheck. So there was I did come from California, so I guess I have permission on that. But it was like, you know, one of the attributes that I wanted to attract and work with were clients that were really clean about money and paying on time. And I just had that as my fourth attribute. And so I have to tell you, in soon to be 15 years with one exception, I've never, ever had an issue about getting paid. I've just never had any issues around money. And I can remember even 11 or 12 years ago thinking it would be cool to work with successful career women, like who were leaders and were married with family and trying to juggle it all. My wife was in that camp. And I really think I even said 40 to 50-year-old female leaders, you know, and this is going to sound totally crazy, but as God is my witness, the phone rang 3 times in a row over the course of a month with that exact demographic. And I can still hear my inner critic downplaying the power of setting this type of intention. But, you know, as I say to clients, it doesn't cost a penny to reflect on what juices you most go there. So, you know, and of course, you know, obviously I'm a big fan of leveraging your network. I mean, starting with family and friends, if this is new to you, lean in there, right? I mean, in the career transition world, 75% of jobs a day come through who you know and your network and referrals. And I can't think of a more effortless way in coaching than to hang right there, because it's free and it works. And I've, you know, got 14 plus years as a testimony to that. And then the last piece that you know, I was known for in Phoenix is really looking at how you go to market. I mean, I am a big I didn't even have a website for my first 3 years, and I only did it to begin to articulate what I was doing on the phone as I was about to add my speaking business. And I'm a huge advocate for new coaches not to create a website in the beginning, and I'm also a huge advocate for not defining your brand in the first year. And as you know, the big why of that is that I just saw so many amazing gifted coaches who felt compelled to spend months working on websites and language and font and color, and all the while not getting clients and thus not getting revenue. And I just found those new clients who would be like pit bulls on getting clients, right? They were not in learning what the type of clients that they like to work with and the issues that really juice them, but they also had their confidence growing exponentially through the experience, and they were getting paid for it. So it's from there that I really believe you are best equipped to define your website and your brands. You know, it's all of that, you know, just get clients first. And in fairness, I know some coaches, if they're older or whatnot, certainly may know their niche. They may know where they want to go. But I still say, just go get clients. Get into the skill. Practice. And let it then naturally inform you, as you know, and as a testimony, over the last you know what, if I've had a, if 11 years of having a website, I've had one client that came through it. It just, as you know, that's just not the way it happened.
We cannot get our clients via our website.
You know, and you and I both have laughed about our journeys because we certainly have growing pains. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, my first coaching company, fresh business card, it was Millam & Associates, which was, I love my ego because the only one outside of my dog, it was just me, right? There were no associates, but there was something about that felt really big. And
yeah.
I thought I wanted to work with partnerships and entrepreneurial partnerships and couples, but then that wasn't so, it was called Partnergize, and that wasn't so exciting. And then I was working with a couple, and they were talking about making deliberate choices. And my brain, you know, I just thought, that's cool, Deliberate Choice Inc., you know, was birthed.
Love that.
And then
love that.
Finally, in 2006, I believe, Bold Moves was birthed via a speaking marketing agency when I launched my speaking career and co-authored the book. And you know, in retrospect, I think, is, you know, you're a fan of the word, you know, perfect journey, but I wished I could have been more relaxed and just trusted it more because I think there's just a natural evolution, but just get clients, and let the rest fall into place.
Well, say more about your book, Bold Moves, and the things that you have going on besides your coaching business. I know you're a member of the National Speakers Association, and I know you have a variety of things going on. So tell us about that, how your coaching is involved in the
You know, I think it's, when we think of coaching, for some people it's a profession, and for others it might be a skill set, right? And I think it's an interesting thing to look at, you know, when you're beginning to think about which way do you want it to be, and you know, sort of on a seasonal basis, you know. And for me, I think it was in 2005, this is sort of wild and tell us quickly, but I remember a dream that I had. Are you okay?
Uh-huh. Yes, except I just realized we have a caller. And
hold
up on
the
dream because I want to hear about that dream. But let's let's unmute caller phone number ending in 0760. And you're live with us now, caller, if you'd like to tell us who you are and ask your question of our guest, Alan Millam.
Hi, I'm Marjorie calling from Buffalo, New York.
Hi, Marjorie.
And I'm sitting
welcome.
Here. I have an appointment tomorrow to have my first website built. And I'm sitting here and thinking, oh, my God. What synchronicity? I'm a new coach. I'm not quite certified yet, but I've been coaching probably for about 9 months now. And I feel the pressure to make that website, so I really appreciate your answer. So you're recommending maybe becoming a member of a speakers bureau, getting your word out that way, because I'm not sure how I'm defining myself yet. I've had...
You know, Marjorie, boy, this is very fortuitous. And certainly you need to trust, you know, certainly need to trust your journey and where you believe you're going. But I just have to say, with all due respect, even to speaking bureaus, I mean, is that, you know, to get a website and to be, and if it feels forced by going through this process to attempt to put language there to the world that may look at it, but they're not going to, in my experience is, they're not going to buy you because of it. I mean, at very best, it's going to be secondary information for you. So I don't know if you've already signed the contract, but, you know, as I said, if I'd much rather you continue from your 9 months and be greedy to work your network and to leverage your clients if they're enjoying you to say, you know, based on our experience, where, you know, if you're wrapping up with them, who would be, you know, a couple people might be beneficial that I, you know, could share what I do in your world and go there and, you know, have that experience that then naturally informs you as to what, how you want to position yourself. And,
okay.
And again, I just, from my perspective, you know, 14 years, one client through the website.
Wow.
Now, I need to be respectful to the fact that, yes, we have search engine optimization. We've got a whole bunch of social media things that I don't, I'm now just learning about. But for I would just challenge you to come back and just say, wait a minute, you know, do I really need to invest that money for something that I'm not sure is even going to be right for me right now? That's what I would have you contemplate tonight before you decide what your day looks like tomorrow.
Well, I'm fortunate. I'm in an executive a group of people, a pod group, and this gentleman does a lot of volunteer work. He's excellent. So I think I'm going to go ahead, and he won't charge.
Okay.
He won't charge it.
Well, that's different. I mean, I was in part saying the financial piece. So if
right.
he's willing to do that for free, it you know, I just want you to notice if you're going to go through the process, how much of it you feel you're having to make up versus
yeah,
really know in your
that,
heart.
But I will meet with him just to discuss it and
great.
And get some feedback, yes. But, oh,
great.
I appreciate your...
Great.
Yeah.
What perfect
and,
timing.
Perfect
yes.
timing. Everything evolves as it should, Marjorie. This is
yes.
Catherine. I just wanted to share one thing from my experience. I, too, well, back in 1995, no one had a website, but how I built my business initially was I had no criteria. I was not nearly as professionally nor personally mature as Mr. Millam, and so I had no criteria at all for who I would coach, and I spoke wherever they would let me come. I spoke mm-hmm. to leads groups, to networking groups, to small chambers of commerce. I spoke at the Glendale, Arizona Public Library Small Business Series. I spoke any place they would let me come. I had no criteria, and I offered everyone in the room a complimentary, no obligation demonstration coaching call. And
wow.
That's how I built my business. And so I would encourage you, rather than putting your energy into trying to define yourself and develop a brand and just do what Alan said, you know, just get out there and coach.
Okay.
And through speaking, you can, I believe you can get those coaching clients.
Well, thank you both very much. I appreciate
yeah,
it.
No.
Great. Good luck. Good luck, Marjorie.
Thank you so much.
For joining us. Yeah, of course. Of course.
All right.
So, okay, take care now. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
So, Alan, tell us about your dream.
Well, it's a little freaky, but when I was in 2005, I remember this dream when I was 13. It just came back to me. In the dream, I was in a school auditorium. It was nighttime, and there were 1,000 people in the audience. And I was holding this microphone with this very long cord because they didn't have wireless back then. And everyone in the audience had this red, like, glass neon heart. And the red light was pulsating through their clothing. So just imagine I'm seeing, like, you know, 1,000 beating little hearts, sort of. And I just remember thinking, gosh, whatever you're saying, you're touching their hearts.
Mm.
And I just want to qualify that I was 13, no drugs involved at the time. But I totally forgot that dream. Totally forgot about it. Totally forgot it. And then one night in 2005, I just awoke, and it was like, wow. It was sort of like, you know, another door, you know, adding speaking to my business. But I knew very little about becoming a speaker, and so I researched it, and I learned that you have to have a book, or that you don't have to have a book, but it, in that, back then it sort of helped to sort of establish you as an expert. And so through my network, I was introduced to this amazing woman, Shayla Roberts in Phoenix, who was a writer and very creative. And we met and ended up co-authoring the book Bold Moves. And at the same time, I was introduced to this amazing woman named Vicki Sullivan. And she specialized with helping speakers brand themselves in the marketplace. She'd been doing it for like 18 years.
Right.
And we met. And after she interviewed me and she interviewed clients and she went through all my stuff and she, you know, I'll never forget the day I showed up for this meeting, and within the first 2 minutes, she said, we believe you're in the Bold Moves business. And I remember saying, what? You know, and she said, Bold Move. She said, Alan, you know, something happens with clients when they work with you that results in them accomplishing something that they otherwise may not occur, they may not get the results, and we think that's called a bold move. And so that really was the birth of Bold Moves Enterprises, and today, my business is very much in the leadership space, and I coach senior leaders in leadership effectiveness and personal brand presence, and I'm developing a very cool new platform around what we're calling bold leading for global transformation, where leaders are looking at how they take their leadership to the next level, not only in their work, but in their communities, and play an important role with some of our global concerns needing attention. So in this next year, really excited to bring that body of work out, both in speaking and in corporate workbooks for organizations. So it's been a really fun ride.
Yeah,
I
love
excited
that.
Next year.
I love
yeah.
that. Now tell us, if you could take a moment and share your thoughts about what you believe is the future of coaching. We'd love to hear that.
Well, great timing of that question, because I just came back last month from the 2012 Global ICF Conference, which for the first time was out of America. It was in London, yep. And I'll tell you, one of the most poignant moments that still gives me goosebumps was the opening. Here we have 800 coaches in the room. And they are standing up as their flag is appearing on two screens, right? And we're applauding their participation. Would you believe there are 167 countries? I mean, it is such a global thing. And besides that, you know, listening to brilliant keynote speakers, and I would be remiss if I just didn't throw out the amazing Dr. Brené Brown. And if you've not heard her TED Talk, TEDTalk.com, and on vulnerability, or have read her new book called Daring Great, or greatly, Run, Don't Walk. It's just amazing stuff on vulnerability. But more than anything, it was really seeing how coaching is really now a global conversation, you know, and with 167 countries or chapters and 22,000 ICF members, you know, and I can remember Henry Kimsey House, who's one of the co-founders of CTI, saying years ago, how many people do you need to have a sold-out business this year? And I thought, oh, 15. And then he said, well, how many people are there on the planet, you know? And it, like, his point was that it will take a very long time for the coaching industry to ever attempt to get near saturation. And I've just always believed that, you know, we've got to give back. And I think, you know, and being aligned to something bigger than you, you know, joining the ICF, being an active member, getting into a leadership role at the local chapter, becoming certified, you know, it's so important, not only for the growth of the profession, but the growth of all of us. And when more and more companies now are learning about the credentialing process, and yes, it's unregulated, but man, if this is your calling, you know, I can't imagine, you know, going to a doctor that wasn't a part of the EMA, you know, the American Medical Association. I mean, I just think there's something about, if this is it for you, invest in it, right? And you know, for me, it's just been so fulfilling, and I believe it's not a fad. I believe that it's just opening up in so many areas. We've gone from 1 to 2 billion in revenue a year, and, you know, we're relatively still a very new industry compared to the arc of the last 150 years. So I think it's profound, and we're so more and more results-focused. You know, articles and research is showing, and so I think it's absolutely a brilliant time to come into this profession. You know, it's one of the most transformational industries on the planet, and to make a difference in lives and to be privileged to be a part of it. So I think it is an exciting time, and, you know, still pointing up with growth.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, that's certainly what Anna and I believe. And we think we're just at the tip of the iceberg. So thanks. I love hearing your perspective. And I so appreciate you being with us this afternoon, Alan, and sharing your wisdom and your journey and the power of being clear about what you want. So inspirational. I want to take a minute and again acknowledge the Phoenix chapter of the International Coach Federation, which you are the founder, for sponsoring our Blog Talk Radio show. We're here once a month on Blog Talk Radio, icfphoenix.com. Next month, on December 14th, we'll be here at 4 o'clock Eastern with our guest Cindy Reinhart, who'll be calling in from Crestone, Colorado. Cindy's also a master certified coach and is going to speak on energy leadership. She has a new tool that can measure, literally, I think, I'm not trained in it, but I've had it applied to me. It's really assessing your vibrational level, and it's quite unique and quite fascinating, that whole concept of energy leadership. And then on Friday, January 18th at 4 o'clock Eastern, we're going to have Vicki Brock, MCC, and Cindy Reinhart, MCC, back with us. Vicki was here a few months ago talking about her new book on the history of coaching. And Vicki and Cindy and I are going to welcome callers, and we're going to talk about the accreditation process and the credentialing process with the International Coach Federation. And then on Friday, March 15th, we'll have your colleague Linda Miller, also at MCC, and she's going to talk to us about all the transitions that she's made in her career and especially as a coach. So thank you, Anna, for getting us organized and getting us here today. Thank you, Alan, for the extraordinary sharing and wisdom that you imparted to all of us. We're so grateful, and we so look forward to circling back with you at some point on our Blog Talk Radio show to see how your Bold Moves brand continues to emerge and thrive in the marketplace. So thank you so much.
Thanks.
Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Bye.